If you're a jazz fan, then you may already be familiar with the voice of Toronto jazz vocalist Emily Claire Barlow. And even if you're not a jazz fan, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with her voice.
Subway starts fresh at 7. Have breakfast or buy any of our delicious sandwiches to eat later. Subway, eat fresh. Hey, how'd you like to win this cool collection of Polly Pocket hot stuff for you and your best friend? It's easy. All you have to do is name one of the Polly Pocket friends.
Happiness is playing bingo.
Hey, big fella, is there any way at all I can skip the mall?
Emily Claire Barlow spends a lot of time in recording studios, partly because she is one of Toronto's busiest voice actors,
the LCBO.
Partly because she is one of Canada's rising jazz stars.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street.
Emily's music is starting to receive international attention, with CD sales in Japan and a growing internet fan base. She took some time to visit the studios of CHRY to talk to me about both of her careers.
Sunny side on the street, I used to walk in the shade.
How did this all start for you?
Well, both of my parents are musicians. My mom is a singer, and my dad is a drummer and percussionist. And from the time I can remember, I would be accompanying them, or they would be carting me around to the studios while they did various recording sessions, maybe jingle sessions. My dad was a member, Brian Barlow, he was a member of the Boss Brass.
Oh, wow.
For many years.
With Rob McConnell.
Yeah, with Rob McConnell, and he played in the Spitfire Band, and my mom was in the Lori Bower Singers, who sang with the Spitfire Band. And so I would be at McClear Place while they were doing album sessions, at Manta and Sounds Interchange and Eastern and all those studios that used to have the big rooms. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of my childhood there. And I think I was about 7 or 8 when my mom was singing on, you know, one of a million jingles that she was doing at the time. And I think they were looking for kids to do something. And my mom, of course, recommended. She said, well, Emily is singing all the time. She's a great singer. And it just snowballed from there. I mean, I started doing a lot of jingles when I was 8, 9, 10, 11. It evolved in my later teens to doing more voiceover work.
The Toronto Star launches brand new Planet, the first paper with useful information for a youthful generation.
Jingle bells we shake.
In terms of jingles and voiceovers, I do all the Bay voiceovers.
It's countdown to Christmas, and all through the Bay are the
I do all the Tim Hortons. Always fresh at Tim Hortons, that's me doing that.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it.
Just hundreds of commercials, McDonald's.
McDonald's excluding Walmart.
Then in the animation world, I worked for a long time on Sailor Moon. I did the voice of Sailor Mars. I have various guest roles on shows like Martin Mystery, Rescue Heroes. I have a regular recurring character on a show called 16, which is an Elvana show. It's very popular with sort of the preteen age group.
No way!
Yes way. In fact,
my character is Chrissy, the manager of the Khaki Barn, which is extremely fun to play.
You know, just when you think you've made it to the top, someone drags you down. Tell head office to consider her fired.
Well, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
When I was in high school, I put together a jazz quartet and started working around doing local gigs and gigs, you know, on behalf of my high school, which was an art school, Etobicoke School of the Arts. And that really just evolved from there. I went to Humber and started writing charts, and
the rest is history. The rest is, did you know when you were 7, 8, 9 years old and even up through high school, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life?
I definitely did. as cheesy as it sounds, I think I always just knew that I was a singer, not that I wanted to be a singer when I grew up. I just felt that I am a singer and that is who I am. I do remember a time, I think it was when I was deciding what college to go to after high school. I was a bit at loose ends. It was about that time when I started to explore, well, should I take something else, maybe a business kind of a course or a teaching course so that I have something to fall back on? And my dad said, why would you do that? I mean, if you have something to fall back on, then you probably will. So if this is what you want to do, you just got to keep doing it. I sing and I talk, la 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 and blah blah blah.
How do you balance that with doing all the music stuff you do? Which studio are you in more?
I have a certain amount of freedom to be able to sit at the piano and write and be able to do all of the sort of administrative, boring but necessary stuff that goes along with having a small record company and having 5 albums out. Because, you know, my days are very different. Maybe I'll have an audition at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then I'll have a session for, say, a Tim Hortons commercial in the afternoon, and maybe I'll have a gig at night. But I do often have days where I can spend a lot of time writing and working on all the other stuff that needs to be done. So I feel like they actually really complement each other.
Talk to me a little bit about this latest CD, Winter Wonderland. You produced this by yourself?
I did.
Why'd you do that?
Well, I had also produced the previous one, Like a Lover, by myself.
Okay.
And that, Like a Lover, was the first album that I had produced on my own. The previous 3, I co-produced with my dad, Brian Barlow, and he also played drums on the first 3. In Winter Wonderland, I really feel like I was a better producer. I certainly feel that the arrangements are more adventurous than on Like a Lover.
What do I care how much it may store? I've got my love to keep me warm.
I knew that I needed to produce Like a Lover on my own. I had lots of ideas for how I wanted the whole thing to come together. And when I did that, I mean, I'm very happy with the result, but I learned a lot during the process. I really love the process. I love every aspect of making a record. I always chuckle because I feel like when the CD finally goes off to get manufactured, and you're dreaming about that day that you're going to go to pick up all these boxes of CDs, and you're going to open the boxes and see them all and pull one out, and it's going to be so exciting and so thrilling and satisfying. And really, it's always a bit of a letdown because it's just more relief. It's just like, oh, thank God it's done. And it's, you know, it's the color turned out right and there's no typos. And, well, there's always typos. I think I'm at a point right now where I'm probably not a very good collaborator. I really have a pretty solid idea of how I want to do things.
One of the strengths that I found with Like a Lover is that I think the arrangements on that album really made the album. How do you get to that point where it's just like, okay, I don't need to touch this anymore?
It's trial and error, and it's a lot of just trying to realize what I'm hearing in my head. And a lot of times I'm hearing something and I get really married to it, and then actually upon the execution of it, it really didn't turn out how I thought it would. And you have to learn to let go, which is very hard for me. That's something that I struggle with. It's like I don't always get it right. Actually, this is an interesting story. On the Winter Wonderland album, I did an arrangement of Baby It's Cold Outside, and it really did not come easily. I just couldn't figure out what I wanted to do. I recorded it with drums, and Mark Kelso played great. He played fantastic. He played with sticks, and it was really nice swinging and in 4. And I couldn't really put my finger on it, but it just didn't sound the way I had wanted it to sound.
Start to worry.
When I had recorded the rest of the album and started mixing, I just said, you know what, I should have gotten Mark to play brushes on this, because that really would have been more along the vibe, so I actually tried to re-record the drums. But that's very difficult to do when everyone else is playing to the existing drums. We've got the piano, guitar, and bass that are all playing along. I mean, we recorded it all together. So I ended up taking the drums out completely and just playing sleigh bells.
Your hair looks sweet.
I ought to say.
So on the album, there is no drums on that track now. But when I released it as a single last year, there were drums on it at that point. And now I listen to it and I'm like, yes!
Baby, it's cold outside.
Little Jack Frost, get lost, get lost. Little Jack Frost, get lost. You know you don't do a thing but put the bite on the toes.
One of the things you're really good at with your albums is writing vocalese parts for people who don't know what vocalese is. What is vocalese?
Well, vocalese is when lyrics are written to an existing instrumental solo. What I do, though, is actually, I guess it's not a true vocalese because it's not an existing instrumental solo. It's my own scat solo that I'm sort of creating. So I've coined a new phrase. It's called an Emily's.
Won't you listen up? LJ Frost, go and get out of here. You're scaring away the blue sky and the whole green scene. Frosting up my window pane. Freezing me to the bone. I tell that grumpy old night winter to let you come where I...
The process for Little Jack Frost was walking around the house. I had these little tidbits, like scaring away the blue skies. And I had this chickadee-dee-dee-dee, that thing that kept coming into my head.
Chickadee-dee-dee-dee, where'd you go when they brought it?
When you're singing, are you acting?
Oh, definitely. When it comes down to it, I just love to sing. So, you know, within reason, it doesn't matter what I'm singing. When I'm singing, I'm having fun. And when I get to play a character, I'm acting. I'm definitely trying to find different places in my voice and find, you know, a different feeling where this voice can come from.
Another thing that you're very talented at, I think, is singing in other languages, Portuguese, and rapping in Portuguese.
Oh, that took a while to learn.
How did that come about?
Now you're talking about Zabumba Numa.
Yes.
On the Happy Feet album. That was a track that my dad came across. The group is called Zuko 103, and it was from a record called Outro Lado, which means the other side. My dad, you know, brought this and he said, I think we should do this. And I said, are you kidding me? It's just this rapid fire Portuguese rap, as you said. I was frustrated because I was listening to these beautiful Rosa Passos tunes and, you know, João Gilberto, and I couldn't sing along. I could hum the melody and I could sort of memorize certain syllables, but I couldn't sing along and I didn't understand. It's one thing to learn it phonetically, but that just wasn't satisfying to me. But I listened and I listened and I listened and I learned and I learned. And it still scares me when I perform it because one false move and you fall off the tracks and there's no recovering.
Now, you're not with a big label.
No, I'm not.
You have your own label. You decided to keep your own label because...
Well, there were a lot of years where I was looking. I was looking for, you know, to be, quote, signed. This is the big goal that every artist starting out has. Oh, I just want to get signed. I used to have a really different view about it. I thought, I'm working so hard and, you know, I just want someone to notice. And if I get signed, then it's like someone will swoop in and take over and all my problems will be gone. And it's really... That's not the case. I'm not making a full living at being a jazz artist yet because, and that might surprise some people because that might be all that they know that I do. But really, you know, the voiceover work and singing jingles that's able to finance my jazz records. And that makes it so that I don't have to sign a deal with a big record company and have them take all of my money.
Sure.
The record business is changing. It's changed so much, even since I've been a part of it. Since 1998, digital distribution has become the norm. Well, it will become the norm, because let's face it, you have that instant gratification of being able to purchase an MP3 for 99 cents and have it right then and there. So this is, to me, as much as I want to believe that there will always be people who will want to have the actual product in their hand, like I do. I like looking at the pictures. I like reading the liner notes. I like having a physical thing in my hand. I also understand the reality of the evolution of technology, and that's the way we're going. What I really want is for the CD to be available to people in stores, and that's what I've got accomplished now. So I like being able to make the records I want to make with the people that I want to work with, and so it seems to be going well.
How do you think Canada supports its jazz community, its jazz scene?
I feel a lot of support. I feel like I have a lot of support. I can only speak for myself. There's like a strong core in the major cities, that's for sure, of great radio stations and definitely an audience for jazz. In Toronto, I'm finding it really odd that we don't have more jazz clubs. Being such a major city, with the Montreal Bistro closing its doors and the Top of the Senator before that, that was very sad for me, you know, especially the Montreal Bistro, because that's where I really started my jazz career, was there. But then I look at the listings, you know, in online or in weekly magazines, and I see that there actually is tons of jazz going on, but there's just a lot of smaller venues.
One, two, three. I've got just about everything I need. And now you're taking your music internationally.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like?
It's kind of surreal, actually, because Japan is somewhere that I've never been, so it seems very far away. It is very far away. But it seems far away in another way. It's harder to get that initial feedback on okay, how is this album being received? But I am getting feedback, and I will definitely be getting to Japan at some point, I would imagine next year.
I heard from your publicist that a Japanese magazine, and I'm not sure which one it is, maybe you can tell me, was quoted as saying that you are the next Diana Krall.
Oh, I don't know which one that is, but...
How do you respond to that?
I'm totally flattered, because I absolutely admire Diana Krall. And I think she's just a tremendously talented musician. And to be compared to anybody that's so successful and so such an incredible musician, I mean, I'm just absolutely flattered. I don't think that my vocal delivery is like hers. She's got a whole different thing going on. In fact, actually, there was a quote in a Japanese magazine that said, Diana Krall is warm, dark moonlight, and you are beautiful, bright sunshine. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, she's got this warm, husky, intimate delivery, and I know that I would tend to be more sort of on the cheerful side sometimes. In fact, I was actually, I think it was a Now magazine or I magazine, they were actually criticizing me for being too cheerful, saying that I can't possibly squeeze any emotion out of Blame It On My Youth, which I don't necessarily agree with, but because I'm just so darn chipper. Please make a positive sign. Say yes and you'll be mine, and we'll have everything.
Now I'm going to ask for something that maybe from all the interviews that I've heard with you, no one has asked this, but I was wondering if you, maybe you remember them, but if you would actually read your favorite lyrics from one of the songs that you've done, as opposed to singing them.
Wow, interesting.
What song would it be, first of all?
It would be probably Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. I mean, I just think that that's one of the best songs ever written. I just think the melody is gorgeous, the chord changes are gorgeous, and the lyrics stand alone, you know, as a poem, really. You want me to do Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most?
Sure.
And you want
sure.
me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. Once I was a sentimental thing. I threw my heart away each spring. But now a spring romance hasn't got a chance. Promised my first dance to winter. All I've got to show is a splinter for my little fling. Spring this year has got me feeling like a horse that never left the post. I lie in my room staring up at the ceiling. Spring can really hang you up the most. Morning's kiss wakes trees and flowers, and to them I'd like to drink a toast. I walk in the park just to kill lonely hours. Spring can really hang you up the most. All afternoon, the birds twitter twit. I know the tune. This is love. This is it. I've heard it before, and I know the score, and have decided that spring is a bore. Love seemed sure around the new year. Nowadays, April's love is just a ghost. Spring arrived on time. Only what became of you, dear? Spring can really hang you up the most. Love came my way, and I hoped it would last. We had our day. Now it's all in the past. Spring came along, a season of song, full of sweet promise, but something went wrong. Doctors once prescribed a tonic. Sulfur and molasses was the dose. Didn't help a bit. My condition must be chronic. Spring can really hang you up the most. I'm all alone. The party's over. Old man Winter was a gracious host. But when you keep praying for snow to hide the clover, spring can really hang you up the most.
Thank you so much for your music.
Thank you.
Emily Claire Barlow is a voice actor and successful jazz vocalist from Toronto. Following the success of Winter Wonderland, she has already moved on to her next album project, a yet-to-be-titled CD due out this summer. You can discover more by visiting her website at emilyclairebarlow.com. For CHRY Arts and Entertainment, I'm Kevin Shaw.
Bye-bye.